ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 3 चैप्टर 26 टेक्स्ट 6 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद. Translation: because of his forgetfulness, the transcendental living entity accepts the influence of material energy as his field of activities, and thus actuated, he wrongly applies the activities to himself. Purport: the forgetful living entity can be compared to a man who is under the influence of disease and has become mad, or to a man haunted by ghosts who acts without control and yet thinks himself to be in control. Under the influence of material nature, the conditioned soul becomes absorbed in material consciousness. In this consciousness, whatever is done under the influence of the material energy is accepted by the conditioned soul as self-actuated. Actually, in the soul, in his pure state of existence, should be in Krishna consciousness. When a person is not acting in Krishna consciousness, he is understood to be acting in material consciousness. Consciousness cannot be killed, for the symptom of the living entity is consciousness. The material consciousness simply has to be purified. One becomes liberated by accepting Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, as master, and by changing the mode of consciousness from material consciousness to Krishna consciousness. The statements of the verse that we are reading today reiterate principles that anyone who's been associated with this movement for even one or two years should have heard many times. More or less, it's being stated that we are not the body, we are transcendental spirit soul, but because of identification with this body, we are in Maya. And we take this situation to be my actual existence. So we should have all heard this many times before, and we hope that we'll go on hearing it many times again in future. Because we need to understand this. We need to hear again and again to understand. The subject matter of this chapter is fundamental principles of material nature. The subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is Ishvaram Prakrite Puman, the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller and Person beyond material nature, above material nature. But we have so much of Bhagavatam which is the topmost shastra, is dedicated to understanding what is material nature. Actually, Bhagavatam is not, the actual point of Bhagavatam is not to understand material nature, but to understand spiritual nature. So why so much emphasis on material nature, trying to understand this? Well, yesterday Mukunda Prabhu in his class gave some indication of that we are on the wrong side of the cloud of Maya, which from Krishna's vantage point is just a blip somewhere out there. Blip, you know what that means? You don't know what it means. Blip is not part of Indian English. Well, it's actually the wrong word I'm using, because blip is a measurement of time. But it's a little point, a little something, a little grain of sand on the ground, not the grain of sand of Vrindavan. This is separate grain of sand. And behind that, in other words, something very small and insignificant from Krishna's vision, And behind that cloud are the conditioned souls who are thinking, I am the controller, and have no knowledge of Krishna, and think that this material world is all in all, I am the enjoyer of it, due to forgetfulness of the actual position that we are meant to be in of serving Krishna. So this is the situation we are in. And it's very difficult for us to understand material, spiritual nature. Many times Prabhupada, when he was asked about the nature of the spiritual world, he would say, you'll see when you go there. Because that is achintya, that is not within the power of the thinking process to understand. It doesn't act according to the principles of material. The spiritual world does not act according to the principles of the material nature. And our experience is only of the material nature. We cannot imagine what is the nature of this, what is the spiritual nature, which is Trividha Sima, Ulangita Trividha Sima Utata Shai, this Krishna is described as beyond the three principles of by which anything can be understood within this material world. They're limiting principles. They're measurable. That is space, time, and thought. So Krishna is beyond space, he's beyond time, and he's beyond thought also. So how can we understand Krishna? The attempt to measure everything, that is the empiric process for understanding, that we try to categorize everything and write a book, write a thesis, become a master of science. But that is maya. Mapiyate anaya iti maya. The attempt to measure is in itself maya, because Krishna is immeasurable. He's bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. So we can't find him in a telescope. He's too big. And we can't find him in our microscope. He's too small. And then he might be just baby size in front of you, or man size, and then Virat Rupa size. He's not subject to the laws of physics. So to try to measure him by those laws is maya. So Krishna is immeasurable, inconceivable. And actually even the material nature is inconceivable. We use the term achintya to describe the spiritual nature, but even the material nature is achintya. We can't understand. Who can understand? You can describe it to some extent in terms of science, how the tree comes from the seed. But it's actually what we see around us every day. Miracles of material nature. What to speak of spiritual nature? How the mighty tree can come from a tiny seed. How the ants, if you drop a grain of sugar, within minutes they'll be there. There are so many things. How the birds, Arctic terns, one species of bird, they fly every year from the North Pole or the Arctic Circle to the Antarctic Circle. They don't have a modern radar or maps or any such thing. Or the salmon, one species of fish, they lay their eggs, they spawn in a stream, in a freshwater stream, and then the eggs hatch, and the fish swim out to sea, and they go out in the mighty sea, and then they come back again to the same spot inland in the river to again lay their the next generation. How is that possible? So many things in material nature. It's inconceivable. So even material nature is inconceivable, but it is being described to some extent within the Bhagavatam. because we have some conception of what material nature is like. So Krishna, who is Ishvaram Prakriti Param, he is beyond this material nature. And we're also beyond material nature. We're supposed to join Krishna in spiritual existence. Krishna is being described to a large extent within the Bhagavatam in relationship to his material nature, so that from our present position, we can begin to understand that and relate to that. We are impressed by hearing about how he is creating, maintaining, and destroying everything. Although, actually, Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill is far more glorious and relishable to the devotees than Krishna's creating millions of universes. But persons who are not able to appreciate, or they're covered by the maya of not loving Krishna, they will not appreciate this very much, Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. So they may appreciate how he is such a great person, that he is creating, maintaining, and destroying everything. So principles of material nature are being described. Of course, the scientists may not agree with what's being, the modern mundane scientists, they may not agree with this, and they may say, well, it doesn't sound very realistic that the material, there's Garbhodakshai Vishnu is lying down on a big ocean, bigger than Pacific, Arctic, Antarctic, Indian and Atlantic oceans all put together, much bigger. He's lying down on that, on a big snake. And out of his navel comes a flower. And on the top of that flower is born a four-headed gentleman who eventually creates this material world, or creates within this material universe. And you say, well, that doesn't sound very scientific. Well, even Brahma, he had trouble understanding it all. Even he himself, before he got his engineering degree, how to create the world, he was trying to find out how to do it. And he found out from Krishna. He was bewildered, what's going on here? So Krishna gave him the knowledge by which he could create the universe. So the scientists, they think, well, it doesn't sound very scientific or realistic. But then again, if we see their theories, then they, for all their attempt to understand everything rationally, there always comes a point in science where everything becomes irrational, even to the understanding of the scientists. And they have to bring in some theory which at the present level of their understanding doesn't make any sense. And they bring that in, and then they, by consensus, accept it as rational. What they call rational is what they agree to accept as a fact. And to the ordinary man, it may seem irrational. Just like, there are so many instances. In mathematics, we all learn at school that there is no such thing as a square root of a negative integer. It's not possible. Because if you multiply a negative number by another one, you get a positive. So what is the square root of minus one? It doesn't exist, right? Cannot exist. Well, that's what you learn at school. But then if you go further up, so we're told, according to Sadaputta Prabhu, who he did his PhD in some field of mathematics, at a higher level, the square root of minus one, which is called I, given the symbol I, that is required to solve certain mathematical problems. So what is true, what is rational at one level is superseded by a higher level of rationality which is not understandable to persons on the lower level. And then you get into quantum theory, which I don't understand it, you don't understand it, and the quantum physicists, they also don't understand it, although they can talk about it more than we can. And their lack of understanding, they can go deeper into the forest and say, we're lost. But we can't even go into the forest because it's not understood. Everything which they might expect doesn't happen. Everything that you might predict according to the laws of physics doesn't happen. And the only thing you... Well, it's highly... Whatever you say in terms of quantum physics, another quantum physicist will disagree. So when you get to a higher level, it's not so rational as it might seem, as I've many times given the example. That some years ago I read that among astrophysicists there are about 2,000 theories about the origin of the universe. Well, how many astrophysicists are there in the world? Probably not many more than 2,000 anyway. So they all have different theories, or some of them may have several different theories, but it seems they don't really know what's going on. Otherwise they wouldn't have so many theories. That's a lot of theories, isn't it? If you consider each theory has to be backed up with pages and pages of mathematics, which most people they get indigestion just by looking at. And to be accepted as a theory, it's not that you write it down, but it has to be scientifically refereed. That means it has to be put in some scientific journal, and other scientists will say, well, we can accept it as a theory. It passes as a theory. Although no, they don't really know what's going on, but it's something we can think about. So it may seem absurd to the scientifically minded person that this universe is coming from the lotus of Mahavishnu, of the navel, Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And Garbhadakshay Vishnu himself, in the universe he's lying down in, that came out of the hair follicle of Mahavishnu. Sounds highly unlikely. Well, expect many highly unlikely things. If we're going to go higher, then we can expect highly unlikely things. And even material nature is... It's not possible to understand by any empiric process. The only thing that we can... The honest scientist, which is an extremely rare species... They're saying there are so many extinct species or nearly extinct, so one that is always very hard to find. The honest scientist will admit, they don't admit because they're not honest, but an honest scientist should admit that we only have very, very little idea of what's going on, and if we try to go deeper into the subject matter, we can expect to discover more and more things which don't fit with our present way of thinking or even with the fundamental principles of science as we know them today. Of course, they can't say that because then it just sounds like there's no science, and science is supposed to give us some assurance of knowledge that we know what's going on. You can say that to some extent, that we know enough of what's going on in this material world to be able to manipulate nature to make space rockets and computers and satellites and egg timers and different kinds of things are produced, although we're not in control of the reactions. When we're not at the time of making these things, we're not aware of the far-reaching reactions that these have, that making all these things have.
Now it's become apparent that all this industrial progress, as it's called, has produced tremendous side effects of pollution and contamination of the environment. And what to speak of the more subtle effects, the social effects of producing all these things. So it's something like producing all these industrial goods is something like Ashvatthama throwing the Brahmastra, but he doesn't know how to bring it back. He thinks, well, that's a good thing I did, but he's just a foolish person. He thinks it's in his control. Yes, now I did what I wanted to do, but it's not within his control. He's incompetent. If it wasn't for the presence of Krishna, then that would have caused tremendous harm, because he's dabbling in what he doesn't know what he's doing, actually. So Shastra gives us the fundamental principles of material nature. And in Shastra there are also more than fundamental principles. There are also some details. Many details are described, not in exactly the same way as the modern scientists do. As far as I know, within Vedic science there is no description, for instance, of sunlight reacting with chlorophyll and therefore the plants grow. There may or there may not be. Within Vedic knowledge, or at least traditional knowledge, it's known that you take the grass grows nicer and you feed it to the cows and they give nice milk and you offer it to Krishna, and then we also take prasad and it's very nourishing. And so there may not be so much investigation into how the grass grows through the or manipulation of the, trying to give some different chemical nutrients. And nutrients already there. But there is analysis of material nature as much as it is required for human society to live simply and peacefully, as simply and as peacefully as is possible in this condemned situation, so that we can develop understanding of that beyond material nature, and understand that we do not belong to this material nature, but we can live within this material nature as simply and as practically as possible, so that we can develop knowledge of what is beyond material nature. So here are given fundamental principles of material nature. This is not a science textbook. Actually it is. It's the best science textbook. But it's not going into tremendous detail. You see the children going to school carrying huge, like this, isn't it? Like a big pile of books. And each book, you see that what the kids, they're learning. It's so much detailed knowledge in various subjects. And with all technical, I was just looking at someone's biology book on so many technical terms for the different kinds of bones in the body, and the bones of vertebrates, and, well, only vertebrates, all the different kinds, and the really very, very detailed knowledge. Bhagavatam is giving the fundamental principle. What is that? That's already given in Gita, that there are two kinds of nature, bhumirapa nalobaya kangvano buddhirevacha ahankara ityangme bhinna prakriti ashtadha aparayamitastranyam prakriti vidhime param jiva bhutang mahabaho yedam dharyate jagat. And then prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara ityangme kartaham iti manyate. These three verses, we could say that they are the subject matter of today's verse. So there is the material energy, eight elements, five gross, of which one, akash, that's gross, but it's subtle gross. The elements mentioned are going from gross to less gross. And then the subtle elements, man, buddhi, ahankar, these are the material energy. And then transcendental to that is the jiva, who, because of identification with this material energy, is running on the universe. Kartaham, I am the doer. He is bewildered by the three modes of material nature and thinks that I am the doer. Everything is there in Gita, expanded in Bhagavatam, that we are not the doer. Aham hi sarva yajnanam, bhukta cha, prabhur eva cha. Krishna is the enjoyer and master of all endeavors. Here he says of all yajnas. In Vedic society, all endeavors are, everything is meant for yajna. So all the everything is, Krishna is the master of that. And simply to recognize that, that I am not the doer. Everything is Krishna. All energy is coming from Krishna. He may give us some scope to be a small doer, as Upadrashta, Anumanta. He is seeing what we do, and he gives some allowance. All right, you do this, you do that. But he is Upadrashta, Anumanta, Bhogta, Bharta, Maheshwara. We are thinking we are controlling, but he is the controller. What we're doing, we're meant to do for his pleasure only. So this simple point, which the transcendental living entity, if he forgets this, just this point, then everything he does is simply inauspicious for himself. He thinks, I'm doing what is good for me, I'm doing what is best for me, for my family, for my country, but he doesn't know that it's not at all in his self-interest to do so. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to use this term, apaswartha parayana, very much attached to that which is contrary to his own real self-interest. Nate vidu swartha gitting hi vishnum, durashayate bahiratamanina. This is Prahlad Maharaj also, in his analysis of the material condition, that not knowing that the real self-interest is simply to admit our position as servants of Vishnu. We have so many hopes of enjoying ourselves in this material world, but it's all hope against hope. Tipisha tantram urudam nibadha. We're tied up very strongly by the ropes of material desires. And therefore we suffer in this material world, simply not understanding this. So these points are made again and again and again, we'll find in Bhagavatam. Even we get up to the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, which in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam is description of Krishna Leela. That is for persons who have 10th canto of Bhagavatam is meant for relishing by those who are nivritta-tāśāya upagīya-mānat bhavosho that chotra manobhirāmat kautama shloka gunānavānat puman virajeta. What is it? Puran bhavadim. No, I'm getting mixed up. Puran virajeta. Vinapashugnat. Puman bhavadim nataret. So that's the verse I was going to say to you yesterday about Karnada. What is that? Nrideham Adyam, that I was saying you should learn, because your name's in that verse. Nrideham Adyam Sulam, Sulavam, Sudurlavam. Anyway, this verse I say. That 10th canto of Bhagavatam is meant for persons who are free from material desires, who have ceased thirsting for material enjoyment. Such persons, they will naturally want to glorify Krishna. Glorify Krishna not simply as the creator, maintainer and destroyer of this material world, but as he who is uttama shloka, who is praised by persons at the the highest level of spiritual understanding, those who are nirmat saranam satam, those who are non-envious, they will take pleasure in hearing about the wonderful pastimes of Krishna. They will be very pleased to hear how Krishna is killing Putana. That doesn't sound very nice, does it? Killing, as Prabhupada noted once in one lecture. If you find even in the 10th canto over in Vrindavan pastimes, there's more killing than dancing. In the descriptions, there's this demon, that demon, another demon comes. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has analyzed how all these different demons, they represent different principles that Krishna is killing. Putana is the false guru. And recently that magazine came out then. Keshi is pride. So Krishna is killing all these demons. So these pastimes are there. That is relishable by devotees on the topmost level, those who no longer identify with this material world. But even there we find Krishna in 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Krishna is bringing us again to the fundamental principles of spiritual understanding. We find right in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, the yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke swadhi kalatradishu bhoma idjadhi yat tirtha buddhi salile nakarhi jijjaneshvabhigneshu sa eva gokara. That persons who are gokara, which has been described differently and differently. Recently I saw that described, that means like an ass that carries food for the cows. Cows or asses, not intelligent. Cow we worship, but cow's interest is only food, actually. It's an animal body. So persons whose intelligence is not more developed than that of an animal, they identify with this body, which is simply made out of bile, mucus, and air. How wonderful. You like some bile? How much do you want? Kaf pitavayo, svadhi, kalatradishu bhoma idj. That my wife, my children, my family, my country, Mera Bharat Mahan. India, we love India. Oh, we shall go to the holy place and we shall follow all the rules and regulations and take a bath and come back and say, I took a bath. In Calcutta, years ago, our accountant in the temple, he took 2 days off for Ganga Saga Snan. And he came back and said, I did it. I went to Ganga Saga on the Makar Sankranti and I took my bath. That's it. I don't have to do anything more now. I'm liberated. He thought Shastra says like that, but we should understand actually what it means. Just like even in Upadeshamrita, Radha Kunda Snan, that is recommended. But what does that mean? You go running up, take a big jump and splash around a little bit. Or even in our contaminated way of thinking, we may not try and do reverentially, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described that it's not actual Radha Kunda Snan means the Radha Kunda being completely aprakrita, not of this material world. So real Radha Kunda Snan means with an aprakrita sharia, with a transcendental body. So as long as we're identifying with this body, then in the true sense we can't take Radha Kunda Snan. Anyway, the point is here that persons, even their religious life, it's very shallow. So such persons are compared to cows or donkeys. no developed intelligence because they identify with the body. So we find even in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam this is described. Because we need to hear again and again. As Mukunda Prabhu yesterday, as we were driving in the car, he made the comment that everywhere you see the advertisements, billboards, buy this, buy that, buy this cell phone, another cell phone, and go on holiday to Singapore or Malaysia, go buy this airline, that airline, buy this soap, another soap. And if you followed everything they did, you within half a kilometer, you'd be bankrupt. So, but the idea they're putting again and again and again, they don't put the advertisement in one place, but everywhere. And on the billboard, and on the TV, and even they'll sponsor some school program or something like this, just so that it comes up again, and they'll sponsor the cricket team or something like that, so when everyone goes for cricket and they think, oh, this product is, oh, okay. And they have the cricket players holding the Pepsi or whatever it is and think, oh, he drinks it. Although anyone knows he's being paid to stand in the photo. And if the other company paid him more, he'd do it for them too. But people are so stupid that it works. Otherwise they wouldn't do it. The cricket player is holding the Pepsi. Okay, I'll buy it too. Goo, 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 goo. The advertising industry works on the unspoken premise that people are stupid. And it's true. Otherwise it wouldn't work. Otherwise no one would ever buy Pepsi. Ever. Unless it was advertised. They have to advertise, because why would you want to spend any money to drink something which, when I last drank it, which was about 35 years ago, it tasted pretty horrible actually. So, the same principle that we have to repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly hear. We're not the body, we're not the body, we're not the body, we're eternal spirit soul, servant of Krishna. We have to hear, because the whole, everything in this material world is making propaganda that you are the body, you are the body, you are the body, you should enjoy it, you should enjoy it, you should enjoy it. Because that's the whole ethos of the material world. Everyone is here as a false enjoyer. So, how much important it is to hear repeatedly that we are not the body and we are eternal servant of Krishna. And as soon as we stop hearing, we start to want to enjoy again. And that's almost literally. I mean, we stop hearing, we might think that, well, we used to come to the class for 12 years and then we stopped coming. And then as soon as you stopped hearing and then you got involved in material life again. But practically, literally, as soon as we stop hearing, everyone, including myself, as soon as we get out of this class, we'll start to think, I am this body, I am this body, I am this body. So what to do? Put on some earphones with, you're not this body, you're not this body, you're not this body. Well, we are recommended, Kirtaniya Sada Harihi, chant the holy names of the Lord. It's a good practice to purify this unchaste tongue, which likes to talk of topics. Gramya Kata means topics which reinforce the consciousness that I am this body and I am meant to enjoy it. So, hearing and chanting should go on. Shravana Kirtan Koro Anukon Ashata Pachala Chari. We are recommended that go on hearing and chanting all the time and give up all nonsense talks. Kahe Premananda Manusha Janama Shafala Koro Nabhari. We should, having got this rare human form of life, we should make it successful by hearing and chanting about Krishna. And don't put it off that I'll do it later after 3 weeks. I have a little business to do, I'll do it later. Always there's something to do. There's always something else to do. But most important thing we have to do is hear and chant about Krishna, which means not only about the pastimes of Krishna, but we need to hear, well, not only about his transcendental pastimes, but or his pastimes which are fully concerned with the spiritual energy, but we have to hear about his pastimes of how he creates, maintains, and destroys the material world, so that we can understand our position within it. What is our position within the material world? We don't belong here at all. We belong in the 10th canto, not in the 3rd. That's where we're supposed to be. But we're identifying not even with the 3rd canto, we're identifying with India Today or the Deccan Chronicle or something like this. Cine Blitz. So we need to hear, even after hearing the 10th canto, the 11th canto is that we should hear also, to solidify. That's not just put there just for people who are got fed up of hearing the pastimes and they want to get back to some gyan or some. The Prakrita Sahajiyas, they interpret like this, that these sections of Bhagavatam describing philosophy, that's for gyanis, that's not for real devotees. But real devotees, they must hear all the Bhagavatam and find Krishna everywhere. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is in material nature. This is real understanding of material nature. This is real science, to find Krishna everywhere. So even science, we're not against it, but that science, instead of coming to the conclusion, asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishwaram, we studied everything and we didn't find God in our microscope or our telescope or any scope, so he doesn't exist. But instead of coming to that conclusion, we should come to the conclusion that we didn't find God in any of our scopes. How wonderful is he? He's not findable by the material process. But everything is going on by his control. So science, that's also meant for understanding Krishna. You know that verse? You should know. That's the motto of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Prabhupada gave that. No, that they use that for the name of their magazine, right? Vijnanam. Jnanam teham sa vijnanam. That all endeavors are meant for glorifying Krishna. What's that verse? Idang hipongsas tapasat shutasya va svishtasya suktasya ca buddhidata yoho avichutarto kavibhya nirupita. Prabhupada, when he'd always say, nirupita, it's already decided, you don't have to do your research work. Ya uttama shloka gunanavadanam, that all endeavors of the higher section of human society, by performing austerities, studying shastra. How does the verse begin again? Idang hipungsas tapasa shutasya. Shuta means hearing, taking education. Svishta, sukta. But svishta, what does it mean? Svaishta. So endeavors for that which we desire. Suktasya means recitation of the shastra. So cha buddhita, or all in intellectual endeavors, they should culminate in glorification of Krishna, who is glorified by the topmost intelligent people. So there are millions of things to say about this, and this discussion will continue tomorrow and forever, because that is the eternal function of the jiva, to glorify Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. If you like, you can learn these shlokas. That idang hipungsas, that's the motto of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, and that Prabhupada gave it. And then this nrideham adang sulabang sudurlabam plavan sukalpo guru karnadharam mayanukulena nabasvateritam puman bhavabdhim nataret sa atmaha. Lord Krishna compares the rarely attained human body to a good boat, which is capable of crossing the ocean of material existence. And you have the good guru who's like the captain of the ship, and the favorable winds are Krishna's instructions in Shastra. So all facilities are there. So Krishna says you have a good boat, you have a good wind, you have a good captain, and if you still don't cross the ocean of material existence, then you're simply committing suicide, that's all. We should consider. Any question about this?
This is regarding the idea that there are many different kinds of concerns of the Srimad Bhagavatam with regard to the ultimate goal of pure love of God, as you mentioned. In this case, fundamental principles of material nature. So given that yesterday we heard that there are many different kinds of living entities created by Maya due to the differences in the modes that influence them, the question is, are all these different instructions of the Bhagavatam meant for everyone, or are certain sections more relevant to certain
people? Are certain sections of the Bhagavatam more relevant? Well, Shukadev Goswami himself says that I've given many descriptions of the dynasties, of the kings, and so many topics to induce in the hearers the spirit of renunciation. It's not actually the essential topic. The essential topic is Bahav appeared, hearing about the beauty of Krishna. But it's what is essential may be considered also according to the platform that we're on. You could the patient in the hospital, it's essential that he takes the injection. It's not essential for everyone, so that he can get fit and healthy and then go out and play and do it. So the actual goal is to play and have a healthy body. But if he attempted to do that now, he'd get more sick. What's essential for him now is to take the injection. He may not want to take the injection, but if he understands that I'm not meant to be lying on this bed, he thinks I'm very well today because I'm feeling very well because my temperature is only 100 degrees and yesterday it was 101, so I'm feeling 1 degree better. So he may think, because in relative consciousness he doesn't know what his real life is meant to be, he's forgotten. So he requires treatment according to his present level. But the real aim is something different. So all the shlokas of Bhagavatam are glorious and wonderful and non-different from Krishna. Some are directly describing the transcendental position, and others are to help us to come to appreciate that transcendental position. Description of the material nature, if it's in relationship with Krishna, is also transcendental. But the sages at Naimisharanya, they ask Suta Goswami that you please describe all the topics of the Pandavas, yadi Krishna katashrayam, if it's in relationship with Krishna. They weren't so much concerned about hearing how the Pandavas got up in the morning and brushed their teeth, and which also they're thinking about Krishna, but they want to hear topics which directly remind them of Krishna. So we'll also find in Shastra how to brush your teeth. It's also there in Shastra. It's there in Vaishnav Shastra also, or at least that you should brush. And what kind of twig to use, and all this is there described. It's all, if it's seen in relationship with Krishna, then it's all transcendent. It's all devotional service. Although the point of devotional, brushing one's teeth is not in and of itself devotional service. If one does so for the sake of maintenance of the body so that one can serve Krishna, then it's devotional service. But the basic activities of Krishna consciousness are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma Nivedanam. And if one brushes one's teeth in the spirit of Dasyam, now I have to serve Krishna, then that is devotional service. Otherwise, you can brush your teeth according to Shastra, but if there's no motive to please Krishna, you may be following Shastra, but you don't get the actual result of doing so. So that wasn't a simple yes or no answer. Everything becomes perfect if it's in relationship with Krishna. But we also have to see what can be made in relationship with Krishna. There's the misunderstanding of yukta vairagya that is very prominent in our society at the present time is that, well, anything can be used in Krishna's service, so we'll take anything and everything of this material world and Krishnaize it. Well, that's possible to some extent, but at the same time, Shastra gives us directions on what Krishna actually wants us to do. It's one thing is to do what we want to do and chant Hare Krishna and think that this is bhakti, which is not shuddha bhakti. That is, at best, karma yoga or karma mishra bhakti. But bhakti means to do what Krishna wants us to do as described in Shastra. So, well, it's very prominent saying, well, we can use psychology, modern psychology in Krishna's service. We can readjust our minds, and then using our more balanced mind, we can serve Krishna better. But the whole process of modern psychology is based on atheistic principles. So, atheism is not very much usable in Krishna's service, or atheistic principles. This exactly is said in the purport here today. When a person is not acting in Krishna consciousness, he is understood to be acting in material consciousness. That sounds like a very simple, straightforward, axiomatic statement. We should repeat that over and over again. And what is Krishna consciousness? It means to act in the consciousness, doing what Krishna wants me to do. And we learn that from Shastra. Not this idea that, well, this is the Sahajiyas and Mayavadis idea that, well, and mundane religionists idea. The whole of mundane religion goes on this idea that if I am happy, then God should be happy with me. And I'm a pious person because I invoke God's blessings to make me happy. It's not actually religion. It's not dharma. But this is going on in the name of religion all over the world. And when that's brought into Vaishnavism, that's called Prakriti Sahajya or Mayavad. Two sides of the same coin. So we have to learn what Krishna wants us to do. We can learn that from Shastra and act accordingly. And this idea that, well, I feel in my heart that Krishna wants me to do this. This is nothing but cheating, self-deception. It may be correct if it's coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. who wrote that the pratyaksha of self-realized soul is the highest pramana.
So the sections that appear to be dealing with karma and jnana then have to be monitored or arbitrated by a bona fide guru. Otherwise, one doesn't really have any rudder in the sea of instruction.
Exactly. Therefore, we have Bhagavad Gita as it is, and all other editions of Bhagavad Gita, which are written by intelligent, in many cases, pious persons with deep knowledge of Shastra, they miss the point altogether. And they think that Krishna is giving us different. You want karma? Okay. You want jnana? Okay. Whatever you like. But they read the same statement as the devotee reads and they don't get the point. Sarva guhyatimam bhuya shunume paramang vachaha yatte hang priyamana vakshyami hitakamya. Now I'm going to speak to you the highest. No, that's actually. What's the verse before? Manmana bhava madbhakta. What's the verse before that? He says the same thing. That anyway, he gives the word that this is the topmost knowledge. He says several times in Gita, but last time he says, before Manmana Bhava Madhvan, this is it. This is, all right, I spoke so many, this is it. Now this is the conclusion. But the persons who have, due to a different mentality, they don't want to surrender, they're envious of Krishna. So therefore, again, Krishna says, this shouldn't be spoken to those who are envious. And even if it's spoken, they cannot hear it. This envy is the... this is the underlying principle of material nature. And we are so foolish that we're trying to find love in this material world where the basic principle is envy. And even the love in this material world is also envy. Two persons come together and out of intense envy for each other, they think that they love each other. What they call love. In America, they talk so much about love and you have to love, and even among our own stupid so-called devotees, they're talking about, you know, you have to... They talk about, in the West, they talk about falling in love. I've heard devotees, they say quite seriously, you know, I fall in love with this girl and I'm going to marry her. They're so stupid. They're so stupid, I can't believe it. It's just amazing. And definitely, they're going to hate each other within... How long do you give it? 6 months? 1 year? 2 years, maybe? They have no idea of even human psychology, what to speak of any philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This whole idea of falling in love, it's... Someone in Hollywood made it up. Or maybe way back Shakespeare, I don't know, whatever. Romeo and Juliet, but it's the biggest disaster in human society. To think that I am made for you and you are made for me and we shall live together happily. And it's just so stupid. It's just... Whereas in Indian culture, they don't even see each other before marriage. And they live very peacefully and nice as much as possible together. And there's genuine affection as much as is possible within this material world. But they never go around saying, I love you, I love you. If you go around and say, I love you, it means actually you don't, but you have to make a big show just to convince the other person. If you actually love someone, you don't have to tell. That's why in Indian culture, also in the West, you have to, everything you do, you have to say, thank you, thank you, thank you. In Indian culture, you're not all the time saying, dhanyavad, dhanyavad. People think, what's wrong with you? If you're saying like that, it means you actually don't like me, or you don't. There's no relationship. Otherwise, why should you have to say dhanyavad? You do service or you do something for another person because there's a relationship. You say dhanyavad, it means there's no relationship actually. Therefore, you have to vocalize it. Otherwise, it's understood automatically. Much more subtle culture, and this gross culture, I love you, and you have to hug and kiss and all the time, and this always ends up in divorce and husband and wife hating each other because they're completely the wrong understanding from the very beginning. They have no idea. Yeah, in India the culture's changed, yeah, just in the last few years, because they're promoting all these Western ideas. The latest thing that's come up is the sexual emancipation of women, that women should be free to have sex left, right and center like the dogs on the street. And before marriage, after marriage with different men also, it's all being promoted by the... There you go. Indian culture is spoiled now. And they're going to suffer tremendously, as they are in the West already. But they're so eager to become... I mean, they could at least wait till the next life to become a cat or a dog. Why have a little sanity in this life? But they're so eager. They don't believe in hell, but they're so eager to create it right here. Bharata bhumite hoilo manusha janma ja janma shato kari karo para upaka. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted Indians to take up this Krishna consciousness and lift up the world by preaching everywhere. So India's in a very difficult situation now. And I feel that our movement should promote, you know, we're talking a lot about, you know, very, you know, principles beyond the understanding of most devotees. A lot of talk about different leelas and this and that. Our movement should take a strong stand on the basic principles of human behavior. That no mixing of boys and girls before marriage. What are the duties of a husband? What are the duties of a wife? No divorce, all these things. On these principles. Otherwise, we're talking about very, very high things, and we're acting like cats and dogs. Then it's false, and no sincere person will be attracted. So we should have our basic principles together first. And people will be attracted to that. Who's going to be attracted to high talk and then just not even basic moral life? So we should promote all these things among our devotees, because in the West they already, more or less, our society already sold itself out to the Western, Western ethic, or what's the word, the Western mode, or the Western compromise, that divorce is okay, it's normal, and don't bother about it, you know. It's okay, just go on, get another husband, get another wife. It's cat and dog life. Unfortunate, but true. We're talking Srimad Bhagavatam, very high things. Here we have Ras Leela picture. But the West is a mess, and now India is very eagerly following. And I'm finding also, I'm preaching these things in India to Indian, to our devotees. They also don't like to hear it, more and more. They're also, I don't know, they must be watching the TV or whatever. They go to school, and then there's the influence of the outside society. They say, why are you depriving your wife? She should also be allowed to have her own career and her own independence. And not be at home when the children come home from school, so that they watch all they get on the internet and watch all the, no control, no mother at home, no, the father's away 6 months a year, or you never, and husband and wife are going out to the parties and this and that, and the same as in the Western, and then the children grow up completely with so many different psychoses. And but our own devotees, there's so much pressure, and people, they're very afraid of what other people will say. They're very much influenced by this. So they don't want to follow the things at which Prabhupada has stressed again and again in his books. They don't want to follow this. And they say, well, Prabhupada, he was writing for some other era. It doesn't apply now. We have to be practical. And actually, it is easier to be practical and just go along with the whole society. It is easier just to, you know, allow divorce and this and that and everything. But what happens is you don't get any Krishna consciousness. It's easier to live in society, but you just have a mess and cheating religion in the name of Prabhupada's movement. So it's easy, but nothing worthwhile is had easily. It's easy to go to hell and just say everything's okay. It's not easy to say that, no, we have some principles and we're going to live by them. It's not easy. We can't expect that everyone will praise us and like us. We can expect that in the modern age, if you just say the same things that your grandparents said, then people will hate you. They'll scorn you. The same basic principles. Now, the one young woman was telling me that she was dressing in salwar kameez, which is, it's not even actually traditional Indian dress, but it's somewhat chaste compared to jeans and t-shirt. And her parents, who are from Gujarati Vallabh Sampradaya background, were telling, why aren't you wearing jeans and t-shirt? They want her to be a prostitute. Show off your body so that others can enjoy it. This is modern India. Garv se kaho, kya? Kya kehna hai garv se? Sharam se kaho sab kuch. Garv ki kuch baat nahi hai. Very shameful position. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama eva kevalam. Kalo nasteva, 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 gatir anyata. Yeah, those who want to compromise, they often, within our society, they often quote this. That you just chant Hare Krishna, nothing else matters. But you see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was, he was following the Vedic principles very strictly. He didn't say you chant Hare Krishna and have, you know, 5 divorces a year. He never said that. All right, Hare Krishna, it's another... I always come back to this topic because... I'm so sad that the wonderful movement or the great principles that Srila Prabhupada has taught is being compromised by this animalistic outlook. What I thought I left behind by joining ISKCON is again coming in. Unfortunately. Anyway, at least individually we can know what is right. Pravritinchana, vritinchana, janana, vidurasara. We should know what is right and what is wrong by shastraviti and attempt to follow that as best we can in this condemned age. Hare Krishna. Sorry for going on so long. We should finish there. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.